Well, good morning, everybody. It's nice to see parts of you. Some crazy times, eh? Hey. Attaboy. Attagirl, I mean. This is just a nutty thing, but how good to be able to come together again. It's my privilege to be back.
Oh, goodness.
I won't be doing that again. It's my privilege to be back with you on this first day of regathering, such as it is. I can say with some confidence that this congregation has never looked better. Although some of you could use a larger mask. Okay. I mean, we got to do the mask joke, right? I mean, we got to, okay. We are going to spend a few moments today together in the Gospel of John in chapter 6. And if you are so inclined, you'll be able to follow along as we're literally going to go through it almost verse by verse, although I'm not going to read all the verses, on the topic of what now? And it seems an appropriate thing for us to talk about today, because we very much are in a what now situation, even as we come back together. The session spent considerable time and angst and conversation about how do we do it and what are the rules going to be and who's going to make up the dumb signs that we put out there so that people will think it's funny that they're not allowed to sit next to each other. Like, a lot of work went into this. There was a lot of what now kind of conversation. And as we go through John chapter 6, we will see a drama unfold with a number of what now opportunities for the people that follow Jesus in that story, and hopefully we can apply it to our own lives. I know that we all have what now moments. We have them individually, we have them as a culture. And so I know for me, I can think of an individual what now moment, and a number of you will share this moment. You will remember the birth of your first child. Now, if you haven't done that, or if you're maybe online, you haven't had that experience, you may not share this, but you will have another similar moment in your life. And for me, it was the birth of our first child. Now, I loved having a baby. That's because I didn't have the baby. That's because I loved it. It was great because my wife was getting increasingly uncomfortable. And then we got to that place where she was so uncomfortable, she said, we got to go to the hospital. And then you go to the hospital and all these really well-trained people take much better care of your wife than you can. And so it was a really good thing for me to go and be able to say, okay, here are some people that actually know what to do. And to keep the fathers maybe present, the refrigerator was stocked. Like, I'm loving this, right? Like, this is a good thing. Oh, are you doing okay? Okay, I'm just gonna step out for a minute. Ooh, sandwiches, we got little ice cream cups. This is the stuff. Anyway, I will skip all the details, but Allison was born. And again, you know this experience. It's awesome. There's nurses there helping take care of things. The doctors come in and check the baby out. She was in great shape. It was awesome. And then your time runs out. And they wheel your wife and child down to the exit. And the professionals come and put the baby in the car seat the way it's supposed to be done. And then the professionals go back in the hospital. And some of you will know this moment, I went, they're letting me take that home? What now? And life was never the same. It was never, there was no back to what then. What now became a whole new reality. Culturally, have we had what now moments? Most of the people in this room, not everybody, will remember distinctly 9/11, which was a cultural what now moment. I was at school. I was in a hallway, and down in the library, I saw a whole bunch of people huddled around the phone or the television set. And I walked down there, and you're not going to believe this. You've got to see this. A plane just flew into a building. I was like, what is going on? Whatever happened after that, some of you remember this, culturally, everything stopped, and nothing has ever been the same since. How many of you guys remember going out the week after 9/11 and looking up in the sky and realizing for the first time in your life there were no planes? How many of you have traveled since and remember traveling before? What now moments take us to a place where we can no longer go back to what then and apply it to what now, because what now is a new thing? And has 2020 been a series of what now moments for us? It started off, right? 2020 is going to be the year of clear vision. We're going to see clearly now. It's 2020. We got 2020 vision. It's a better day. It's a better world. It's a better future. 2020. And then Australia got set on fire. Does anybody remember the Australian wildfires? Do you remember that? It's almost passed from our memory. It was a worldwide crisis, not because we were in Australia, but because the effect of the fires made the whole world say, what now about climate change? What now about environmental disasters? What do I do, even though I live here, about that? And that was the beginning of 2020. And then the COVID came. And we find ourselves in quarantine, and we find ourselves wondering, what now? And now, even at this later time, you guys are aware that all of a sudden the infections are spiking in places where people are gathering together. And so we come together and we're wearing masks, but do I not wear a mask? Or do I go places or don't I go places? And what now? And then for a moment, we had to forget about COVID because of what happened to George Floyd. And because of the cultural outcry that identifies a systemic problem that's hard to even talk about in a healthy way, because there's so much anger and there's so many repressed feelings and there's so much guilt and there's so much shame about how our culture has dealt with race for hundreds of years and tens of years and this year. And we have to go, what now? Now that we know this, we can't not know it. What do I do now? Do I get involved? Is it enough for me to step back and say, well, I wouldn't do that? Or do I, especially as a middle-class white man, do I need to ask deeper questions about how I can't just go back and say, I'm nice. It's not enough. And what do we do about the economy? You know people, maybe you are people who are suffering economically because of the COVID crisis, because of the economic changes. What about church? What about our family? What about travel? Do I go or don't I go? Do I invite people to my house or don't I invite them? If I invite them, do I make them wear a mask or do I not wear a mask? Like, what do we do? What now? So let's look at John chapter 6 and see if we can get a hint. Now, I don't know about you, but I love taking these stories and looking at them not as, I'm reading the Bible now. The Bible has important things for my life and good messages. But actually entering into the drama. I love the storytelling that goes along with this. And I hope that you do too. John chapter 6 is an amazing drama that is good all on its own. You can take it and you can watch that episode and you can go, wow, a lot was happening in there. And there are what now moments through the whole thing. So we're going to walk through it. So John chapter 6, we find Jesus with his 12 disciples and then a whole group of people, and they're following him. Now, what's just happened before is that Jesus has basically annoyed all the religious leaders. He said some things that really has made them uncomfortable. And so if I'm a disciple right now, I'm like, here we go. There were the religious leaders that have been controlling us. Man, this is good stuff. And we're finally getting some influence because look, thousands of people are following us. this is, man, we are making an impact. This is good stuff. So the beginning of John 6 has Jesus going up on a mountain and all the people kind of coming to him. And they're coming to him because they've seen all the miraculous things he's done. And if I'm a disciple, because we're going to put ourselves in the seat of the disciples, I'm thinking, we're following the right guy now. We put our money on the right horse. We know where we're going, and this is getting bigger and bigger. And obviously, God wants things to get bigger and bigger. And so Jesus starts with the first what now situation. He says, man, look at all these people. Where are we going to get food for them? Now, Jesus is saying to his disciples, what now? It also says Jesus knew what he was going to do. He was just asking it as a test. So the disciples did what all good followers of Jesus do. They had a committee meeting. And like, what do we do? Like, he wants us to buy food. We can't have it. Philip's like, well, there's not enough food. Andrew actually mugs a little kid and steals his lunch and says, hey, here's a little guy. He's got a little bit of food, but that's not enough. And then Jesus does what only Jesus can do. He takes the little bit that we bring to him and he feeds 5,000 people. And it's one of the great miracles. It's one of the few that is recorded in all four Gospels. It's so important. It's such a visual image of Jesus supplying our every need. And the disciples, can you imagine the disciples? This is it. This is it. We don't even have to take care of the people. It's like they're going to follow us and we are going to get more and more followers. We are going to Jerusalem. The Romans are going down. The religious establishment is going down. This, we got it going on. In fact, the people, they had a what now situation. We just ate all that food. What now? We know what to do. We're going to make this guy our king. Like, we want a king because what do we want from our government? We want him to give us stuff so that we're comfortable. On our terms. We want him to be the king because if we have him as the king, we get some food. All right, that's good. Jesus says, no, it's not time to be king. And so he goes away and he withdraws. And so then we have this odd story where the disciples get in a boat and go away from where the people are. And then while they're out on the boat, Jesus walks on the water. Now that's definitely a what now situation, but we won't go into that one too much, like, because it says the disciples were terrified. Because if you saw someone walking on the water and you'd never seen it before, in fact, you've never seen it, you just know the story, you'd be a little scared too. And so they've got a what now situation. Well, he says, don't be afraid. They take him into the boat. And there's so much in this story we're not going to talk about. But the what now is you invite Jesus into the midst of your crisis when you're a little bit put off by who Jesus is, and you will reach the place where you are heading. And they end up on the far shore. And it's a really good story, but we're not going to spend too much time there. We'll get lost. So what happens is the crowd gets up in the morning, right? And the crowd's like, where'd the disciples go? Where'd Jesus go? What are we going to do? I know. Let's go look for him. And so they get in the boats and they follow Jesus to where he went. Now, they follow Jesus, and then Jesus starts to mess with the people. And this is where the disciples are like, whoa. And the story arc becomes really fascinating. So the people follow Jesus. They get to where Jesus is, and they're like, Jesus, what are you doing over here? Like, when did you get here? What's going on? And Jesus is like, the only reason you're following me is because you want another sandwich. You're just looking for more food. And so they're like, oh, no. What are we supposed to do? Like, how are we supposed to follow God? What's the work? And Jesus says this really important thing in the middle of this story. He says, the work of God is to believe in the one that he sent. This is a foreshadowing moment to the end of the story. Because the people are saying, what do we need to do to be right with God? And God is saying, you need to believe. Not do. It starts with what you believe, and to believe in the one that he sent. It's not about getting another sandwich. It's about understanding who Jesus is and following that Jesus no matter what the circumstances is. See, here's the thing that we know about Jesus that's different from us. Jesus didn't care about circumstances. He didn't care if 5,000 people followed him or five people followed him. He didn't care if people liked him or didn't like him. Jesus cared about intimate relationship with the Father. And if I can say it, obedience to the Father. He wasn't trying to figure out his own way of doing it. He was trying to figure out what God wanted and follow God. Now, when I say Jesus was trying to figure out, that's a little odd thing to say, and I get that. But it does say that Jesus would go away by himself to spend time with the Father, to be intimate with the Father. And we know that at the end of the story, he ends up saying, "Hey, God, is there any way out of this? Can I get out of this?" And God's like, you know, that ain't going to happen. And I'm probably making this a little too informal for some people. But at the end of the story, I'll do what you say, even though I don't want to. We have a little bit of problem with that. When circumstances go south for us, when things make a turn for the worst and we don't think it's going, we try to figure it out. We try to figure out what it is that we can do to make things better. We have an idea, even in our faith walk, that if I do good, I should get good. If I do the right thing, I should get the right thing. If I act in a proper way, proper things should happen to me. And then when we don't get what it is that we think our efforts deserve, we start looking at God and going, saying, "What's up? Why did I get sick? Why did this happen? How could God let this happen in my life?" Because the unspoken is, because I did all the right things. This is a little interlude here, but remember this, and I probably say this most of the time when I talk. Jesus was the goodest person that ever lived. He did exactly what God wanted 100% of the time. How many of you can claim that? And they crucified him. The world doesn't work the way we want it to work. If I do good, I get good. That's good for like saving money. That's good for your homework. That's good for, you know, basic responsibility. But it doesn't explain the way that life works very well. And we need to hold on to Jesus in those moments. The work of God is to believe. Well, all right, back to the story. Out of this, the work of God is to believe. Then the people say, "Well, how about if you show us a sign? And then we'll believe you." And what sign do they point to? "Oh, Moses gave us bread from heaven. Could you give us some bread?" Like they miss the point. They go right back to the sandwich. And so then it starts to turn, okay? Then Jesus says, "No, it's not Moses giving you bread. It's my Father that gives you the true bread. The real bread is me. I'm actually the bread of life." And the disciples are like, "That's cool. It's kind of weird, but it's cool because God sent you, right?" And that's probably like putting you closer to God than the Jewish leaders. And that's good because the religious leaders have been kind of not really for them. And so sure enough, the Jewish leaders begin to get a little uncomfortable. "How can this guy say he came down from heaven? We know his mom. We know his dad. Are you kidding? Who does he think he is?" Now, at this point, you have this tension building, where Jesus is beginning to say things that are not going to be so comfortable for the crowd. So Jesus' response, now if I'm a disciple, I'm like, "Jesus, you're great, but see how these people are following us? Why don't we go back to some healings? Let's go back and heal some people. They like that. Remember, that's why they followed? We had like thousands of people come and follow. Let's just go heal some people. Let's maybe get out of it. Can we get out of this discussion? Because I don't see like this is going to go good." So then Jesus does this. He says, "Not only am I the bread of heaven," but he responds to the Jews being upset with, "Actually, the bread I'm talking about is my flesh, and you're going to eat my flesh." Now, communion starts on August 2nd. As people that are a product of a 2,000-year system, this is like, "Oh yeah, that makes sense. You get the little wafer. You get the little sanitized piece of bread." They're going to come. There'll be individually wrapped wafers now, so you don't have to. I don't know if that's true. I'm just kidding. But it might be, because that's what some churches are doing. We get this sanitized version. But imagine hearing for the first time, "If you want to believe in Jesus, you're going to eat his flesh. And the disciples are like, Jesus, where are we going here? This is, and you can you imagine the tension as people are like, what? Like, what? And it says the Jews get even more upset. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? What are we, like cannibals? And so Jesus' response is what? He says, oh, not only do you have to eat my flesh, but you also have to drink my blood. If you want to have life, you have to eat my flesh. You have to drink my blood. Now we're cannibals and vampires. How is this? Like, what? And the disciples, looking at the crowd, see the crowd beginning to titter, sees the discomfort. Can you imagine the tension? And wanting to turn to Jesus and say, Jesus, no, like, where are we going here? This is not, these people are not tracking with you. Like, I'm not tracking with you. What are you talking about? And we come to verse 60, which is the one verse that I will read. I'll mention another one too. We come to verse 60, and it says this. On hearing this teaching, many of the disciples said, this is a hard teaching. Who can accept it? And what I want to invite you into in this story is the principle of hard teachings. That Jesus brings things into our lives. God brings things into our lives. Things happen in our lives that are opportunities for God to teach us. But we don't want hard teachings. We want an easy life. This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it? And does Jesus go, no, let me explain it to you. You're actually not going to eat me. No, it's like we're going to cut up a little loaf of bread and you'll take a little piece of bread and it won't be bad. And there'll be this little cup and like you won't even have to touch anybody else's cups. I mean, it'll be cool. He doesn't try to pacify it at all. He says, does this offend you? Man, you got no idea what's coming. This is why I told you, there's no way you can follow me unless God brings you to me. Because it's too big for you. If you try to understand it, I love the song today. I'm not going to lean on my own understanding out of Proverbs. If you try to understand this and make sense out of it, you're not going to do it. You're actually going to turn and walk away from God in the midst of a hard teaching if you try to understand it and explain it to yourself. Only God can give you the strength to hold on in the midst of hard teachings. It says then in verse 66, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. Thousands of people. They ate. They were excited. And Jesus brings a hard teaching. And many people, many of us, many of you perhaps, have experienced a hard teaching. And you turned away from God because you couldn't understand it. This is a hard teaching. Who can understand it? Who can accept it? Who can follow it? In the message, it says, that's too much to swallow. That's too much. So then Jesus turns to the 12, right? And you gotta put yourself, you gotta see the drama in this. It's just this kind of classic, holy Simon Peter, giving the right answer. This is kind of John's version of who do people say that I am? And Simon Peter says, oh, you're the Christ, the Son of God. And it's kind of, oh, that's really cool. He gets that. This is John's sort of version of that. You don't want to leave too, do you? Jesus says to the 12. Now, here's what I think might be true. It's not in there, but if I'm a disciple, this is what I just saw. I saw us feed 5,000 people. I saw people coming to us in droves. I saw us gaining momentum. I saw us gaining an opportunity to influence the culture and change the power structure. I saw me on the winning team. And now, they're all gone. There's 12 of us. And Jesus says, you guys want to leave too? And can you picture the disciples? Who's going to speak? Well, we know the Gospels well enough to know that Peter's always the one that speaks. And he gives the answer. The only one we can have to hard teachings. Unspoken. Yeah, actually, we would like to leave. Actually, this is so uncomfortable. I don't want to be here. Actually, I think I'd like to go back and fish. Actually, I think those guys that just left, they might be right. I think you might be crazy. Eat flesh, drink blood. Actually, yeah, Jesus, can we get out of this? And Simon Peter says, what we all need. Where else am I going to go? Lord, to whom shall we go? You are the Holy One of God. I have no other answers. None of this makes sense. I have no clue what's going on in my life right now, but where else am I going to go? Who else has the answers that I'm looking for? To whom shall we go? And for us, in our hard teachings, we are called to that same space. We want life to be good. We know life isn't. COVID is a hard teaching, friends. Black Lives Matter and all of this, all that came out of that, that is a hard teaching. This new reality, we can't go back to what then when we didn't wear masks and we didn't worry about this. We can't go back to that. We have what nows that we have to answer. But maybe the what now is not so much about what do we do now, is who will we look to now? And maybe what the what now is not, what do we do now? It's like maybe this is something we should have been doing more of all along. To whom shall we go? Are we going to rely on our own efforts, on our own understanding, on our own abilities to interpret this? Are we going to look at that up and to the right graph that everybody wants? I'm making more money. I'm getting more things. I have more influence. Or are we going to cling to Jesus? Jesus didn't care about circumstances. He cared about intimate relationship with the Father. Peter voices what they were beginning to understand. We have no other choice but to follow you. Culturally, are we in a what now moment? We sure are. And the people of God need to model clinging to Jesus. To whom shall we go? I don't know what's going to happen circumstantially, but I know that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Maybe individually, you're in a what now moment. Maybe it's a diagnosis. Maybe it's a life circumstance. Maybe it's a relationship. Maybe it's financial. Maybe it's health. Maybe you're just really struggling with your own personal faith because of all of the chaos you see around you culturally and in your family. Where else are you going to go? I encourage you, I challenge you to join Peter in saying, there is no other answer but Jesus. To cling to Jesus. To repeat after Peter, to whom shall I go? And to hold on to Jesus. If you're here today, if you're out there, and you feel like you've never really taken that step of giving your life, your moments, your what nows to Jesus, I want to encourage you to do that today as I pray and close us in prayer. That you would surrender your life to Jesus. No, it doesn't mean you're going to understand it. It means you're going to know someone who does and believe that God himself has control of these circumstances no matter what anybody else says. To whom else shall we go? Let's pray. God, we just thank you that you are the God of the ages, that there is nothing that's happening in our culture, nothing that's happening in our personal life that surprises you. and you call us simply to learn to rely on you. God, we do not like hard teachings. We didn't choose them. We don't like them. We don't want them. Thank you that you are a God that in the midst of hard teachings, you teach us about ourselves and about you, that we might be more fully connected, devoted, dependent on you. For in that we find our freedom. We love you, Jesus. Amen.